Welcome to Growing Indoors, a limited podcast series from Cannabis Business Times, brought to you with the support of Foes. Pleiades by Foes is the perfect supplemental greenhouse grow light. Its seamless integration creates best-in-class light uniformity and never casts a shadow on your crop. Pleiades delivers more photons for less energy, providing an efficiency that is unrivaled in the industry. External light harvesting sensors measure the natural light in the greenhouse and adjust the output of the LEDs accordingly, so they never run more than they have to. The fixtures can even be daisy-chained to avoid the overhaul of your current electrical setup. Every company boasts about being the best, but Foes proves it. Schedule a facility tour today at foes.com. That's F-O-H-S-E.com. My name is Eric Sandy, and I'm the digital editor for the Cannabis Group at GIE Media. We're back again to continue this 10-episode project, where we're focusing our interviews on indoor cannabis cultivation from a broad spectrum of angles. This is Episode 9. Our guest this week is Kevin Cate, Chief Cultivation Officer of Loom Cannabis Company in Michigan. Since he joined Loom in 2017, he has guided the design, build-out, and launch of the company's 250,000-square-foot high-tech cultivation and solventless extraction facility in Everett, Michigan, along with another 33 acres of outdoor cultivation that launched last year, and more to come. Beyond Kevin's hunger for learning, an important character trait has helped him successfully oversee the Everett operation's uber-rapid growth in just a few years. He's incredibly positive, and it's contagious, according to those who work closest with him. I noticed that in our interview, which covers Loom's recent growth, as well as team development, and most importantly this week, R&D in an indoor facility. How does Kevin define R&D? Why is it important? We got into that. So please enjoy my conversation with Kevin Cate.
Kevin, thanks so much for joining the show this week. Very glad to get a chance to talk with you about your work and the team that you and Loom have been building in Michigan, and certainly just about the operational side of Loom's facility and even outdoor property. Before maybe getting into some specific indoor cultivation questions, I wondered if you could maybe set the stage for us just by describing Loom's cultivation facility and certainly the outdoor space too, but we'll keep the conversation focused on indoor.
Sure, man. Well, first of all, thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here. Like you mentioned, my name's Kevin Cate. I'm the Chief Cultivation Officer of Loom Cannabis Company. And Loom Cannabis Company is now the largest single state operator in the United States. We are based out of Michigan, and we have 31 dispensaries open now, 31 retails. We just started building those 3 years ago. So it's been quite the undertaking. Along with those, we've got a 250,000 square foot indoor facility, completely state of the art. And then we've got a 75 acre, it's closer to 100 acres, but 75 acres of canopy at our outdoor farm here. And we also have a bunch of hoop houses and a fully automated greenhouse, with heating and cooling and supplemental lighting and everything. So we can operate that facility year round. We also have processing. We do solvent free and hydrocarbon. So we're kind of the one-stop shop, fully vertically integrated self-supplier.
I love it. Yeah. Just to maybe pause there for a second, largest single state operator. I think that's an interesting, position to be in, and an interesting phrase as well, just given the nature of how cannabis markets interact with one another. To be able to focus on a single state seems like a powerful thing. Could you maybe elaborate a bit on what that position means to you and the team at this point?
Absolutely. Well, myself, I've been part of, several other larger cannabis companies in the past 10 years. And, I noticed that a lot of the larger companies I had been working with and been competing with had really been interested in being multi-state and developing that multi-state footprint. And, what are for the reasons of developing and creating more value in their company, or just to have a wider reach for marketing and again, creating more value for their company. But, I had just not, I hadn't seen a company who had done that really well yet, you know, at least 3 or 4 years ago when we first got going here in Michigan. And so our goal and our idea was to do one state really well and then move on to the next one. And, you know, in Michigan, it was, we kind of had the perfect storm of executives here, people that work here at Loom, visionaries to kind of, you know, form that. And what I mean by that is people that have not only had fantastic experience, you know, operating hundreds of retails in other businesses in Michigan and in other parts of the country, but have also had that outreach and experience, you know, operating a company that large and be, you know, get familiar with that sort of internal infrastructure, which is actually a lot to bite off sometimes. You know, a lot of people kind of overlook the stuff that doesn't pop up when you're thinking about creating one of these, you know, larger cannabis companies. How do we handle our internal communications, and what sort of platforms are we using to, you know, set goals, and what sort of platforms are we using for forecasting, and how accurate can we get? And, you know, all of those sort of things that start to play a major role in the success of your company that typically a, you know, multi-state operator is just thinking about, okay, where's the next best place we can open up a satellite retail store? Is it going to, how much visibility is it going to get us? And, you know, what's the least amount of money we can spend on it, basically. And so, you know, for us, we had the vision to open a 100 retail stores in the state of Michigan by the end of 2024. COVID obviously had a little impact on us, threw us off our goal slightly, but we're still pretty much on pace. By the end of this year, by the end of 2022, we should be right around that 45 to 50 retail mark, and then hopefully able to close that gap to the 100 by the end of 2024, maybe somewhere in 2025. But yeah, we were just completely focused on doing one thing and doing it really, really well before we decided to, you know, take the step into going multi-state, multinational. So far it's going amazing. We do hold the largest market share in Michigan by quite a bit. We employ over 1,200 people right now, and that number is drastically growing. I know that we'll break that 2,000 mark as far as employees goes. We'll have over 2,000 employees by the end of this year. And so, you know, we're quickly approaching and competing with some of the largest multi-state cannabis operators in the country, even though we are still just a single state operator.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's certainly just a very clear growth trajectory. I know it wasn't too long ago, I think toward the end of last year, when the 1,000th employee was, you know, sort of announced by you.
Yep.
And the team.
Yep, absolutely.
So, yeah, and you mentioned forecasting and goal setting. I want to return to those in a little bit, because I think that your point about internal communication is key. You know, that kind of growth doesn't happen without good communication strategies within the facility.
Absolutely.
Before digging into that, I did want to just touch on, you know, you mentioned 31 retail stores with plans for many more, of course. Just to maybe set the stage for the cultivation side of the business, I'm curious, how does the retail side maybe influence cultivation? I mean, sales trends are the thing that I'm
sure.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, we, first of all, we group up with our retail staff and our cultivation every week. So, you know, we have a meeting where it's basically a reconnect for cultivation and retail to go over what strains might be trending in the area. You got to keep in mind that we are spread across the entire state, including the Upper Peninsula. So that is a lot of ground to cover, and not everybody in every area likes the same strain. So paying attention to that market diversity and to the needs and demands of whatever that local market is really only happens through accurate data collecting and feedback. And then being able to aggregate that into something readable and something that I can make a decision off of as a cultivator, and plan ahead. Because, you know, one of the main things I think that kind of catches people by surprise sometimes in the commercial cannabis space, especially when you're vertically integrated, is you can't just create a strain overnight. And it's difficult to have good quality strain diversity in a market that you know has a demand for certain genetics and meet those demands in a quickly, in a timely manner. And what I mean by that is cannabis takes a long time to cultivate, you know, to get through an entire cycle. You know, we flower on a 9-week cycle. We veg for about 3 or 4 weeks and, you know, plus rooting, propagation and drying and curing and trimming and testing and packaging. It's, you know, a 3.5-4 month process to get one full run out to the retails. So, you know, that doesn't include our tissue culture, propagation side of things, and then also cultivating mothers and growing the mother stock large enough to be able to do a big enough run of that genetic to make an impact. So that only happens by really concise and accurate planning and really concise and accurate communication from the retails to the cultivation about forecasting and you know, where the market seems to be going. So with those weekly regroups that we have, we basically go over sales. Here's where the market seems to be trending in this area, with the goal being that we get to pick and choose which strains we grow and in which quantities to meet that demand months and months ahead of time. So all of that is really, really a critical piece of success, because if you're growing a bunch of strains that people don't like, they're obviously going to go somewhere else, and getting your thumb on that beat and being able to meet that demand in a timely manner, being a large commercial cultivation, is not always the easiest task, but with clear communication and good, you know, constant communication with your retails, that sort of thing is achieved. So that's that has, you know, it didn't just happen overnight. It's taken some forming and some learning from some of our experiences in the past with our newer retails going online and new markets, and just seeing, you know, what the appetite is for and, you know, certain strains that are needed or wanted. And then, you know, taking recognition to that and finding similar strains or like strains that we might anticipate that market wanting or being interested in. And all of those things just play a really valuable role at the end of your day, at the end of the day, in your sales, because that really is what drives sales. You know, I remember when I first got into cannabis 12 years ago or so, one of my best friends in the industry had, you know, we were looking at developing this fancy new retail, and he kept telling me, he said, you know, Kevin, it doesn't matter how nice your retail is. You could have a retail in a cave. As long as you have really good weed that people want, they're going to come. And it couldn't be more true, you know, it couldn't be more accurate. And so the forecasting, the planning is really just a way for us to hone that in and dial that in and make sure we're as accurate as possible and not, you know, growing anything that isn't going to sell well.
Yeah. I'm curious, just, you know, here we are talking in March, 2022. I'm curious if there's either a cultivar or even a chemical profile that you and your team are working on right now that's actively growing, that is a response to something that you had talked about with the team 6 or 8 months ago.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, one, you know, Michigan is a fairly newer market on the adult use side. It has a pretty substantial and pretty well-known medical market in the past. They had well over 300,000 patients here in Michigan. Which is pretty substantial for a state with only, you know, 9 or 10 million people. Seems to kind of be the going rate across the country, 1.5% or so of total population, 1.5-2% seems to be on the medical side. You know, it's like that in Florida as well. I think they have 20 million people and they're at about 700,000 patients or so. You know, you kind of see that trend across the country. But, you know, for us, and being in a newer market, you know, I'm used to kind of being in newer markets. I feel like my whole career has been kind of jumping to new states that are opening or just regulating or soon to be regulated, to kind of be, you know, one of those first to market and try to capitalize as much as we can and make an impact. But what I noticed with those newer states coming online is that you have a less educated consumer base on the product of cannabis itself. And when you have a less educated consumer base, typically what takes the cake as far as sales is just higher testing product. It's almost a numbers game, it seems like, in the beginning of any any state opening into adult use. You know, all of the higher testing strains are going to sell. And then it starts to crack into the indica, sativa, and hybrid categories, which I've also noticed in new states. It seems like there is just a massive want for sativas. Again, because I believe that you're dealing with a less experienced marketplace and they're kind of falling to the easier or shorter, quicker conclusions of, okay, this type of just learned cannabis and this type of cannabis is going to make me tired. This one's not. Or this one's going to make me active. And it seems like people are more drawn to that active lifestyle of cannabis, at least new users. And so we saw a massive demand for sativas here, which I've seen almost in every other state I've been to that was new, that was recently regulated. So a big demand for sativas and a big demand for higher testing strains. And so knowing that kind of right out of the gate here, we started to allocate more sativa genetics for our R&D room and do more pheno hunting around sativas and also try to gather more genetics that were really high testing sativas that maybe had a shorter flower cycle. Being a commercial cultivator, you don't just get to grow whatever you want, whenever you want to. Everything falls into a schedule and a cycle. We have 20 grow rooms here. Each grow room has over 1,000 plants in it. And so we have 20,000 plants in flower every single day. And then once a week, we're harvesting two of those rooms. So we harvest on we flower on a 9-week cycle. We will tear the room down and harvest the entire room in 24 hours, clean it, go through a deep clean in the facility and then repopulate it the next day. So it really gives us, you know, 20 rooms and that short of a turnaround times, rather than taking a week to clean it and repopulate it, that gives us an extra 8 or 9 harvests a year, which is a substantial amount of income, you know, when you think about it. So for us, the sativa and the higher THC was really an obvious factor for newer consumers in Michigan. And so we really started to focus on developing those cultivars at our facility and getting good sativas that flowered in that 9-week cycle. And that we could still get really good yields and quality off of, and started to implement those in our product lineup. So yeah, absolutely paying attention to trends and forming our cultivars and what strains we're growing really based off of that.
Yeah, and you know, I know you mentioned their R&D, which of course yes. plays an important role in a lot of things we're talking about. Could you maybe just elaborate on the role of R&D and some of the important characteristics of...
Man, absolutely. Yeah. It's so critical. It's one of those things that's it feels like such a luxury in this day and age in commercial cannabis, just because, well, first of all, it's difficult to get money and funding to build these cultivations that have a massive capital outlay that's required, you know, and you got to keep in mind that traditional funding is not there, right? It's difficult to get traditional financing through banks and financial institutions. It's still not mainstream or readily available right now. COVID, everything else, it's difficult to get financing to build these big commercial grows. And when you do, the focus is on maximizing your square footage of canopy space, simply because that is where your dollars come from. The more square footage of canopy space you have, the more dollars you earn. And so I think the R&D rooms, 99 times out of 100, might be an idea on the initial plan, but they get swept under the rug once they realize that that room could be developing them, you know, some financial return. But I think it's one of those things where you don't realize maybe how valuable it is until later on down the road. We were lucky enough to get an R&D room, a really nice 12 light R&D room built in our new expansion facility here in Everett. It's state of the art. It's a fully functional grow room, as in it has the exact same controls as our larger grow rooms here, except everything is completely separated from the rest of the building. So there's no crossover in air supply or filtration. There's no crossover from irrigation. It all has its own infrastructure for everything, mainly so I can record the data. I want to be able to know, you know, how much moisture my plants are transpiring. I want to be able to know exact wind speed in there. I want to be able to know temperature and climate and what's changing and when and why and how, and be able to have real data to look at and to make good decisions off of. Now, is it worth it? Now, so for me as a commercial cultivator, my commercial production space, I want to have fully dedicated to genetics and strains that I know are going to produce for us. And what I mean by that is I want to be growing strains that I know we're going to sell at the retail. I don't want to test or trial run anything, because if I do that and something happens, or if I do that and it's not the result or the outcome I was looking for, then it can affect us negatively, not only in our cost to produce, but also in our yield, and which eventually translates into dollars made. I'll give you an example. At one of my older facilities, we had been testing new genetics, and someone brings in a new strain, or we plant seeds and we need to flower them out to see how they're going to do before we can commercialize the strain. So we put them in with one of our grow rooms. Well, the second you do that, you're taking away space that you know was guaranteed or close to guaranteed to be flower that would be on your retail shelf and has already been proven to sell, with something that you're just testing or trying. And more often than not, it's not going to turn out the way that you want. And it takes time to pheno hunt and find good, strong genetics that are resilient and strong and high yielders and test high and yada, 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 flower into the cycle that you're on and are used to your climates and everything else. And so at the end of the day, you can end up losing potentially millions and millions of dollars of product that is going to go to waste. That really, in my mind, should not be part of the commercial production space. The commercial production space should be reserved for your genetics that are the always in stock genetics that you know we're going to produce, that you have a history with. And then the testing and trial runs should be done in your R&D room, where it has less of an impact on the rest of your facility. And at the end of the day, hey, if you have a great run of the R&D room, maybe you can sample that product out to your employees, or maybe that's something that can make it to the retail shelf. And if it can, then that's absolutely great. But at the end of the day, the cost for that R&D room, or the cost impact that the cultivation, a large commercial cultivation this size that we had with trying new genetics, that cost far outweighed the cost of an R&D room. So it made sense for us to build that R&D room and be able to run these tests and do good pheno hunting in there, and also gives us the ability to really advance ourselves as far as, we're always testing things with different light levels, increasing PPFD, increasing or decreasing electronic conductivity in our nutrient levels, and associating that with wind speed and light energy levels, and just trying to find that sweet spot of maximum growth and maximum, metabolic rate in the plant, where it's just in continual growth mode, where it's really working and it's not held back by anything like, too much humidity in the room, so the transpiration rate slow down, or, things like that. So having the R&D room allows us to test those things and prove it and then apply that on a commercial scale. And to me, that's just the really, when you're at this scale and this size and there's this much money at risk, it's really the only way to do it safely.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned, the lighting levels research, just as another example there. Obviously, cannabis research is an ongoing thing and sort of entering quite a great productive era here as reform mm-hmm. continues. But just for your purposes and for your team, just taking lighting as an example, are you trying to drill down on specific single variables? This may be, certain lighting spectra or PPFD, and controlling for everything else? Or I guess, how do you approach lighting LED when there's so many variables at work?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, initially, I was just testing every single LED under the sun, and I was testing it in my environment of my older facility I had back in Vegas. I was testing, I tested over a dozen different LED lights at the time, and run them all the way through flower, really just because I knew in the back of my mind, that was the one thing that really had bothered me about the technology of the cannabis industry. The technology for the lighting was so old, it was 40 or 50 years old. And here we are in this multi-billion dollar industry with all this crazy cool technology going on. And we're using street lights to grow that put off massive amounts of heat, which then we have to spend serious, serious dollars on a mechanical infrastructure to remove that heat. And the whole thing to me just really didn't make sense. And so I've been spending a lot of my time researching and trial running these LED lights, hoping and waiting for something to kind of change technology wise. And at that time, I was just interested with any LED light I could find that could do the same thing I was doing with HPS. And that would have satisfied me. I'd be happy. I'll swap them and then, you know, continue on. Well, that ended up happening. And then the science started. You know, we didn't start initially. We just said, holy crap, here's a light that works. It actually grows as much pot or more, the same or better than we were doing with our HPS lights. Let's do it. And then the second we got into it was when I started to get more into the R&D and the trial runs and really dive deep into the science of what's happening, you know, biologically, internally with that plant. And the really interesting pieces, you know, really, to be honest, the LED lights is kind of what started a lot of our R&D and trial runs here. And just seeing the direct relation between increasing light intensities and the PPFD levels, along with how much the plants were drinking and how much nutrients they were uptaking. And then also combining that with wind speed. And with wind speed, I basically just mean aeration in the room, right? Getting the leaves to move. And finding the sweet spots in there. And this has everything to do with timing of the plant, how long it's been in flower for, when you can increase the wind speed, how that wind speed how that wind speed can change the metabolism of the plant, and how the light energy can drive more growth as long as you have more nutrients and water and wind to be able to combine to kind of find the perfect storm. In my mind, there's a max for each plant, right? And we're trying to always maximize the genetic potential of what that plant can be. And the only way to do that is to make sure that we're pushing that plant as hard as we can push it when it's ready to be pushed. And it almost seems like, you know, there's a time in a plant's life where it can crawl, it can walk, and then it can run, and it can sprint. And finding that sweet spot of when it can sprint and really juicing it, you know, really giving it everything it can take and maximizing it, it plays all the difference in the world. You know, one thing that we do often, which I've seen play a major role in how we operate, is we do sap analysis. First of all, we mix all of our own nutrients from scratch, you know, using minerals. So we will take a sap analysis of the leaves of every genetic we have every week of its life. And I send those off to a lab, and the lab sends me back a report for that genetic that basically gives us the entire nutrient profile. And it'll say for each nutrient, which if it's either deficient, optimal, or excessive. And so I can, by mixing my own nutrients, I know that some of these numbers with our strains are changing as I'm increasing light energy, and they're changing in the way where the plant is consuming more nutrients. So by watching these factors, I'm able to kind of dial in our nutrients, even tweak our nutrients recipe, and kind of almost have an operating procedure for each genetic where it can take more light intensity at a certain age, and therefore it can uptake more nutrients, and I might need to increase the wind speed a little bit. And, you know, by playing and tweaking these things, we have been continually increasing our yield and our output. You know, I tell people our yield sometimes, and some of my old friends in the cult in the cannabis industry, they didn't even believe me when we were hitting 4 pounds a light, but we've been hitting 5 to 5.5 pounds a light of trimmed, cured, grade A, 30% plus THC flower out of all of our newer rooms here that has this new technology in it. And a lot of that is really because of these tests and trial runs we've done, not only with lighting, but lighting obviously plays one of the most important factors for the plant. But doing these trial runs and tweaking little things here and there just to see the result, and then collecting data on those and making decisions going forward and just getting better and better and better and better and better. You know, and that's one of the things that has driven our success here, and it keeps us going. You know, we're seeing real change from the things that we're implementing in a positive way, and our tests and everything are working. So it's just such a critical part of being a commercial cannabis cultivator. And as you mentioned earlier, you know, we're just starting to get some really good research done now. And one of the reasons is, well, cannabis was illegal in the United States for so long, so you don't have this massive, you know, history and background of data and records of cannabis experiments. We're kind of, you know, paving the way, if you will, for the cannabis industry. You know, we're pioneering it, so to speak, because it just hasn't really been done before on a commercial scale. So it's exciting, it's fun, and to actually see results from your work is, you know, it's satisfying for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's certainly just one of the more fascinating areas of the business right now is this chance to be at the vanguard of cannabis research. So I was we started this conversation by talking about the facility a little bit, and we've covered a lot of ground in the meantime. So I wanted to maybe return just to the facility in general and ask sort of a broad summary question at the end of this interview here. What is something that you can't live without in your facility? And this could be a piece of equipment or a design feature, but what is something that maybe might get overlooked or maybe not everybody has that to you is key to your day-to-day work?
Well, I know the answer to that question, which I will tell you, but first off, I will say that there's 100 things, you know, that we can't operate without. You know, there's a lot of really important things with commercial cannabis that you just can't operate without. But to me, what has made the largest impact is data. And I want to clarify that, you know, being able to collect accurate data is a tall task, right? It's not necessarily an easy thing to do with a living plant. So to enable yourself the ability to collect accurate data, some of those decisions come in to how you build the infrastructure, both mechanical and plumbing wise inside your facility. So planning ahead so you can collect good data. And the reason why data is so important is because without good data, you can't make good decisions. You can't make good projections and you can't forecast. And, you know, as everybody knows in business, if you can forecast accurately, you're going to win. And so, you know, for us, collecting quality data, I have a full-time, I actually have 3 full-time IT guys in my facility, but I have 1 full-time data collector. That's all this guy does full-time is collect data inside the cultivation. And he collects data everywhere from some of our new genetics in our R&D room, all the way from doing runoff tests in all of our plants to sending out for sap analysis. We have a full tissue culture lab here at the facility. So and a full R&D lab room, and then we have an analytical lab and an internal QA/QC lab. We have a really, really nice and fully developed lab here for us to be able to conduct these tests, but also so we can accurately gather this data and then aggregate that correctly and then make decisions off it. I've had so many facilities and been a part of so many companies before where I thought I was collecting good data, but it's not. It wasn't doing it accurately, and I wasn't able to make good decisions off of real data. So being able to collect that in the very beginning really for me is one of the most important things that I've realized and really came to appreciate being one of the larger commercial cannabis cultivators now. That's just such an important factor. So I you know, for me, that's one of the things I can't operate without. It's almost like you're flying blind. You know, without a dashboard, you just don't know what's ahead of you or what's behind you if you can't see real accurate data. And it's impossible to make good decisions off of it, you know, for your company unless you can see that sort of thing. So getting good visuals or visualization on what's actually happening in your facility and making sure that you're collecting good data and making good decisions off of that is really, for me, it's a critical point, something I couldn't operate without.
Certainly, yeah, it's powerful to have that view right in front of you, especially with just the sheer number of variables in this kind of business. We've only touched on a few today, but having the full picture is everything.
Absolutely.
Kevin, just want to say, you know, thank you for joining this week. This was awesome. It was great just to get a chance to turn toward R&D, which is important and maybe sometimes gets a little overlooked in the grand scheme of things, but glad we could focus on that a little bit today.
Yeah, man. Hey, me too. Pleasure being here, Eric.
And that's a wrap on another episode of Growing Indoors. That was episode 9. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Kevin Cate of Loom Cannabis Company in Michigan. I know I did. You know, it was great to catch up with him. One thing I want to point you to after that interview, if you want to learn more about Kevin and Loom, is last summer, In August of 2021, we ran the Cannabis Leadership Awards. This came out as a special print supplement. It was also a special event at Cannabis Conference 2021. And as part of that award ceremony, Kevin Cote, who had been nominated for a leadership award, was ultimately up on stage winning a Cannabis Leadership Award at this inaugural event of ours. So I really want to make sure that you check that out. If you like this interview, head over to Cannabis Business Times. Check out August 2021. The Cannabis Leadership Award supplement is online. You can see some photos from the event as well. We are bringing that back for Cannabis Conference 2022. The nomination forms are open right now. You can check this out at cannabisconference.com. It's under the About tab at the top of the website. Make sure you check it out. We're very pleased to bring back the Cannabis Leadership Awards for the second year. This is going to be, again, a print supplement with Cannabis Business Times magazine, as well as a special part of Cannabis Conference 2022. So make sure you check that out. Look at the 2021 winners, including Kevin Cote. And again, cannabisconference.com for all the information there. I want to shout out Foes again while we're here. They're making this podcast possible. They were also, as it happens, the sponsor of the Leadership Awards last year, and very excited to be working with them. Again, this is episode 9. Next week's episode 10. This is it for the run of Growing Indoors. Very excited for this series, and thank you for joining us along the ride.